Good morning. I'm going to tell you a story of love, struggle, loss, and spiritual growth. It starts with falling in love. Quite literally, love at first sight for me. It was big, luminous brown eyes, big smile, and almost bald. My daughter was 6 months old when I first met her in Guatemala City, where she was born. I had come to bring her home after the adoption papers were complete. We bonded instantly, like superglue, unbreakable. Sophie was a happy child, uninhibited, loving, mischievous, adoring her big sister, and always happy to be with Mom. So, what happened? How did my bright, happy child become a 14-year-old spun out of control, suffering extreme emotions, increasing anxiety, depression, and engaging in self-harm? My daughter's behavior was puzzling and worrisome to me. She disappeared for 24 hours at a time, befriended people with unhealthy, even dangerous lifestyles, and confessed to crimes she didn't commit. All this in fraught attempts to keep or make friends. Not surprisingly then, she had difficulty keeping friends. These young people didn't understand her intense emotions, her fears of abandonment, or her desperate attempts to keep them close to her. This made her vulnerable to abuse, both emotional and physical. After increasing encounters with police, hospitals, and mental health professionals, a family counselor commented that maybe she had borderline personality disorder. So I looked it up. Borderline personality disorder, also known as emotional dysregulation, which really describes it better, is a serious mental illness that centers on the inability to effectively manage emotions and thoughts. Most people who have this disorder cannot regulate their impulsive and sometimes reckless behavior and unstable relationships. There were 9 criteria listed, and sadly, I recognize aspects of my beloved daughter and nearly all of them at some point. So borderline personality disorder, which we often refer to as BPD, it's not such a mouthful, has these traits. Fear of abandonment. Intense, short-lived relationships. Unstable sense of self. Impulsivity. Intense mood shifts, such as shame, fear, anxiety. Problems with anger. Dissociation, or feeling disconnected from their body or surroundings. Chronic feelings of emptiness. Suicidal or self-mutilating behaviors. While many of us experience intense emotions at some point, those with BPD suffer in a way that is more pervasive and profound, and they don't just grow out of it. Loving someone with BPD can be tumultuous and challenging, as is common in people with BPD. To deal with her emotional pain, Sophie began self-medicating with a variety of drugs that inevitably led to an addiction disorder. And tragically, 2.5 years ago, in June 2017, Sophie died. Another statistic in the more than 1,400 people who died of fentanyl poisoning in 2017. Only this time, this statistic was our Sophie. She was just 17 years old. Sophie always wanted to help people who were struggling like her. I'm sharing her story, which is our family story, to honor that desire and to help others understand this illness. BPD is more common than schizophrenia and bipolar disorder combined. Up to 6% of the population may have it. Yet it is a highly stigmatized and misunderstood mental illness. BPD behaviors are difficult to deal with, alienating family, friends, and, believe it or not, health professionals. Until I began to understand a little bit about how BPD can affect a person's perception of themselves and the world around them, their behaviors seemed manipulative, attention-seeking, and reckless. But it is really an unintentional, though desperate, attempt to get their needs met. Their destructive and hurtful behaviors are a reaction to deep emotional pain. But BPD is not the sum total of who these people are. The same emotional traits that cause such difficulties have their positive side. People with BPD are often passionate, spontaneous, insightful, and deeply loving. Many have a super empathy and are capable of great compassion. It is not unusual for people who have learned to cope successfully with their BPD to enter helping professions, such as social workers, counselors, nurses, and yes, even doctors. At this point, I'd like to tell you a little story, a sidebar, if you will, about how I became a Unitarian. One day, about a month before she died, Sophie said to me, out of the blue, "Let's go to church." "What brought this on?" I asked, trying to hide my astonishment, for she'd never been to church a day in her life. "I think I should join a youth group," she said. Now, I had become quite frantic in my efforts to find something that would uplift her out of her increasingly down-spiraling struggles. So I ran to my computer and Googled Victoria youth groups. I came across the First Unitarian Church of Victoria, which was just down the road from where I live. Upon reading about Unitarian Universalism, I thought to myself, "I don't know about Sophie, but this is something that I can get into." So I started attending Sunday services. Unfortunately, Sophie passed away a few weeks after I started attending and never got there. But I continued coming to the church, where I found great kindness and support in dealing with my grief over losing Sophie, even though people didn't really know me yet. The Unitarian Church has now become an integral part of my life. It felt to me like Sophie said to me, "Mom, here's a community to support you. I gotta go." So you see, Sophie was not her mental illness. She had a big heart, an infectious smile, and a generous soul. For all the chaos she brought into our lives, she also brought great joy and an enduring love. So it is said our fortitude can astonish us. Most of us are stronger than we think. Still, I had to dig deep to find an inner strength I didn't know I had. I think parental love is the purest form of unconditional love. And I can tell you, it was sorely tested. But fortunately for Sophie and me, that superglued bond was stretched, but it did not break in her lifetime. The family counselor I talked to about the trouble Sophie and I were having, and who first alerted me to the possibility she could have BPD, also advised me, if nothing else, maintain the relationship. Those words echoed in my mind and sustained me through all the difficult times my family experienced. Maintain the relationship. Now, I want to acknowledge that for many people, especially in adult relationships, the connection may have already deteriorated to the point where it's just not possible to maintain it. And for those people, the healthiest approach may be to maintain the distance. Also, I want to stress the importance of self-care. You've all probably heard about the analogy of the oxygen mask when the flight attendant instructs you to put on the oxygen mask first before on your child. You can't help your child if you're unconscious or otherwise incapacitated by stress and worry. Similarly, we can only help our loved ones struggling with mental illness by first taking care of ourselves and setting healthy boundaries whenever possible. Only then can we rise to the challenge of maintaining the relationship with our loved one, for how else can we support them if we don't maintain a connection? When after several years I discovered the Borderline Personality Disorder Society of BC, it was a breakthrough for me. This society has a peer support group here in New Westminster, as well as in Vancouver, Victoria, and Nanaimo. It's for people with BPD, but also their loved ones who come to support them. And I'd like to take this opportunity to let you know, I think Marilyn already introduced Mike and Emily, who are here from the local BPB support group, and they will be available after the service to answer any questions you may have about BPD. They'll be wearing this button that says, "Ask me about borderline." That there'll be a table of information downstairs. Attending the Victoria support group for the first time, I realized that Sophie and I were not alone in our struggle with her BPD. The society provided information that finally gave me greater insights into my daughter's mental illness. Now, it is difficult to be grateful for an illness that caused my daughter and my family so much pain, and I could never be thankful for such a tragic outcome. And yet the years of dealing with my daughter's mental illness and with the grief over her loss have been a time of huge personal and spiritual growth for me. It is why the yin-yang symbol has taken on so much meaning for me, acknowledging that the shadows and the light of being is part of who we are. To me, it is especially poignant for those struggling with mental illness. Learning coping skills for BPD brought some light out of the darkness. It brought me closer to being my better self, which is one of the spiritual goals we have as Unitarians. I discovered that BPD can be treated successfully through an intense therapy called dialectical behavior therapy. It was developed by Dr. Marsha Linehan, professor at University of Washington in Seattle, who had suffered with BPD herself. Some of you may be aware of cognitive behavior therapy. It's a form of psychotherapy with a goal of changing patterns of thinking or behavior that are behind people's difficulties, and so changing the way they feel. Dialectical behavior therapy builds on this by including a layer of what has been described as spiritual teachings, such as mindfulness, acceptance, non-judgment. These practices not only help the person with BPD to learn to regulate their emotions, but are also essential for family and friends to support their loved one. And incidentally, I believe these practices can help us in all of our relationships. So how was I able to maintain a relationship that was so fraught with emotional and behavioral minefields? Some of the components of dialectical behavior therapy helps me with this: validation, radical acceptance, benign interpretation, compassion. So how does validation work? When Sophie was in emotional pain, as her mom, automatically I wanted to make her feel better by saying calmly, "It's all right. You're going to be okay. Things will get better." But her distress would escalate. "Don't say that." I was just trying to help, What was I doing wrong? I was ignoring her feelings, what she was experiencing in the moment, and therefore I was invalidating her. She did not feel okay. Things were not all right, and she could not imagine right then that things could ever get better. What she needed in this moment was to know that I understood what she was feeling, not for me to try to fix things right then. Instead, when I would say with genuine concern, "You're really hurting right now, aren't you? I'm sorry you're feeling so bad." It's like a switch was turned off. Her feelings were validated and she knew I was with her, so she calmed down. So, when someone is in the throes of their emotions, I found the three most helpful things to do are, one, validate, two, validate, three, validate. We all have hopes and dreams for our children, but when BPD rose up and overthrew those expectations, that's when I realized I was going to have to accept a different path for my daughter. It required not just acceptance, but radical acceptance. Instead of fighting or denying the new reality, I needed to accept and then reevaluate my response to it. I had to accept the reality that my bright, inquisitive daughter was not going to be able to complete or even attend high school at all. In my world, that was pretty radical. When she decided to stay out all night, I couldn't control that. I had to radically accept that this was going to happen. Only then was I ready to negotiate that she would at least text or call me to let me know she was all right, which she usually did. Once we accept reality for what it is, then it is possible to make changes and move forward. In my relationship with Sophie, I tried very hard to embrace the concept of radical acceptance. This is essentially being non-judgmental, not thinking in terms of good or bad. For a parent struggling with a teen for whom bad things often did happen, it was difficult not to jump to conclusions, not to berate her for her not-so-good decisions. It was my fear that would lead me to express anger or frustration and blurt out accusations. But by interpreting her actions benignly, I found that I could create a safe space for us to continue to be open with each other, to maintain our relationship. And finally, Sophie taught me to broaden the boundaries of my own compassion to include the troubled and troubling young people she sometimes brought home as friends. Kids also struggling with addiction disorder and often difficult family situations. I developed a greater appreciation for all those people who may speak or act strangely or hurtfully, that they are struggling with their own tribulations. I'm reminded of an interview with Leonard Cohen about his depression. The interviewer commented on the unfairness of it, and he shrugged and said, "Everybody has something, right?" I try to remember that, especially when somebody does or says something hurtful or what I might consider wrong-headed. Everybody has something. Almost as tough a hurdle to surmount, I learned, and I'm still learning all this, to have compassion for myself. As inadequate as I felt at times, well, a lot of the time, I really was doing the best that I could under very difficult circumstances. Aren't we all really? To draw on the wisdom of the Dalai Lama, if you want others to be happy, practice compassion. If you want to be happy, practice compassion.